Bem-vindos ao podcast JE Entrevista, o programa de entrevistas do Jornal Económico em podcast no Spotify e em todas as plataformas. O nosso convidado este mês é Olivier Vaufray, é especialista em Foresight, Strategy and Insights e antigo consultor do Fórum Económico Mundial, onde esteve mais de 10 anos a ajudar várias entidades a prepararem-se para o futuro. Atualmente, este especialista suíço lidera uma das unidades mais importantes na Arup, uma das primeiras empresas de consultoria de engenharia a adotar uma abordagem multidisciplinar e que trabalha com vários clientes europeus. Nesta sessão do Innov Club, Olivier colocou os convidados numa espécie de máquina do tempo e levou-os até 2040 e ao difícil exercício de perceber como vai ser o mundo daqui a 16 anos e que desafios se colocam às empresas nesse contexto. Olivier Vaufray é o convidado desta semana do Innov Club, uma colaboração entre a BTI, uma consultora de inovação colaborativa e a Sociedade de Advogados Vieira de Almeida. O Jornal Económico, como sempre, orgulha-se de ser membro desta iniciativa. Esta entrevista será conduzida em inglês. Welcome, Olivier. So, I would like to ask you first, what's the biggest mistake that we do when we try to predict the future in business environment?
Hi, thanks. First of all, thanks for having me.
Thanks
it's
a
pleasure,
lot.
Pleasure to be here. I think the first mistake maybe is even the word of prediction.
Okay.
So I think we've seen that, you know, we have very good approaches and ways to model and try to predict the shorter term future. When we do foresight, and if we think about the longer term, as we did in the session earlier today, it's moving a bit, you know, further out in the time. And what we've seen is it's usually very difficult to predict what could happen there.
Okay.
If you think about what happens in 10 years and further out, you also have much less facts, evidences, and data. And therefore, I think one of the first building block of foresight is to maybe move away from trying to predict and rather focus on what could happen.
Let's remove the predict.
Let's remove. It's important to do, but maybe not when you're looking
not
at things
this,
like we did
in this
today.
Exercise. So to foresight is much more difficult, but you have a more structured decision, right?
I think I would say the foresight is coming in when prediction falls short. And I think here, maybe in two words, is a bit of a more open approach than prediction, but it's also giving you some tools on how do you structure your thinking to get there and see what could happen. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit of a mix of structure and also a bit more creative, open thinking.
Okay, so the mix of those two factors are really important. So in a world so volatile, how it's the world that we live in today, it's a utopic to give a foresight of the future in, for instance, 10 years?
Mm-hmm. I think the only, what I would say is, it's utopian to predict it.
Okay.
And it's not to try to figure out how this could look like. And it's actually quite important to be able to, even today, start to imagine and discover how your future operating environment could look like, right? I think the only thing is, so it's not utopian. I think it's necessary. And it's also, it's necessary, I would say. And why so necessary? There's something interesting that came out earlier this year. There's a global survey of CEOs by PwC.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, I think they had something like 45% of the CEOs that were surveyed through this year's survey are saying that they believe their company might not be economically viable in the next 10 years unless they transform. So what this says is that even if it's very difficult to figure out what happens 10 years down the line, they're all thinking they will have to transform by then. So therefore, it's quite important to figure out how this world will look like before you start deciding where you are and where you play and what you do in that world, right?
Mm-hmm. So that 45% are responsible CEOs that know that something is about to change and maybe they are not ready for it.
Responsible and lucid CEOs. And it's also 5% more than the year before. So it seems that it's also growing and more of them, and this is CEOs of global companies. understand, you know, that challenge on the medium term, long term. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So do you think that companies are ready to reach the conclusion that somehow they are not ready for what's coming next?
Yeah, I think that will depend from companies, and okay. I think there's some difficult discussions to have. And hopefully this is some of the discussions that going through a process like we did earlier this morning with the members of Innov Club drives, right? Mm-hmm. It's not just about feeling good about what we do and just confirming everything we have in mind. The whole purpose of this is to ensure, you know, we're not missing out on anything. We don't have blind spot. And of course, it's then will depend on the capacity to accept that maybe we're not on track, right? But I think it's hopeful to see this 45% because it means that 45% of the CEOs actually recognize and are able to voice the fact that they actually don't feel prepared at all. Mm-hmm. Because being economically not viable in 10 years means you're not around anymore.
Yeah.
So they're accepting
you are
this,
right? Extinct.
Exactly.
It's like dinosaurs to say, well, maybe in 10 years we will be extinguished or something. So I was listening to you and I was asking myself, do you think there are sectors that their responsibles are not convenient to give a foresight for the future? For example, technology, mm-hmm. the technology sector. Do you think that the responsibles of the great technological companies right now doesn't want to look to the future and says, well, this will be like this because it could be maybe dangerous or inaccurate, maybe?
I think it's difficult to kind of have a one size fits all and kind of say,
okay,
no, this is like
yes,
this for...
Yes.
I think you have a bit of, yeah, different cases, different companies. What you're saying is, for some of these companies, they are not ready to also see the type of impact that they have on the long term. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Yeah. I think it might be. I don't know. I think there's then what happens also in a case like this. You have a mix of things. You have, and we talked about this today. When you look at technology, there's one thing is the capability that the technology gives you, the next wave of innovation, of research, new products, etc. And this is one thing. When you look at what happens, I think it's a mix of this, but it's not happening in isolation or in a vacuum. Then, of course, you have regulation that also defines
okay.
how this plays out. And then we talked also about values, right? It's how what
yes.
drives people. And it's I think when you think about that, of course, the technological aspect is one big driver of what could happen. But it's not going to decide in isolation. It will intersect with things like regulation and what people want to make out of this. And that's what defines the future. So there's a case probably for the technology space in general to be thinking about this. And I'm sure they do.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that would be what comes to mind mm-hmm. when you ask this.
So concerning future readiness in companies, how important is, like you said in this session of Innov Club, to detect, to respond, and to evolve?
Mm-hmm. This is quite fundamental, and I was mentioning it is based on research that has been run for a few, I think 15 years now, following companies in Europe and really extracting evidences of this. The three things are important, and I think they're almost useless if they're not coming together, right? So detecting is very important, but if you detect change and you're not able to adapt or evolve,
to execute some changes,
you know,
right?
Then it's not making you future ready, right? And it's difficult for you to be able to evolve if you're not picking up on the change, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's almost a bit of a triad that comes together. And also based on this discussion we had this morning, these are important, and usually the companies and organizations that are very good and are future ready in that regard, the established processes almost on an ongoing basis. So it's not that they detect one thing by chance one day, is that they become almost master of the art of detection, and
yes.
then also understanding what this could mean for my organization, and then what should I do, right? So
mm-hmm.
it's having this whole chain that needs to happen. It's not one without the other, and it's something that should become almost recurrent and an established process in a way.
Do your professional experience, do you see that there is a big gap between the right diagnostic and the real acts and decisions to prepare ourselves to the future inside the companies? There is a gap between those two factors?
I think it happens quite a lot, and I would say in companies, but anywhere, and maybe it's even something sometimes a little bit human. It's not because we know that we do, right? And I think if you take an example like the pandemic, it's not like no one never talked about this as something that could happen. And then even, you know, at the time I was living in Switzerland, and we could see that just a few kilometers away there was this thing happening in Italy. So the knowledge was there about how a virus like this spreads and everything. Yeah. But on the radio, and everyone was saying, you know, it's fine. It's not going to happen to us. We're good. We have a better hospital system.
In Portugal also.
And so my point is to say it's not obvious. And I think most of the time you have to really work on making that connection, because sometimes it's not easy to understand that piece of information. Mm-hmm. It's not easy to act on it, right? So there's a whole process. And maybe just to build on what we did this morning, and we were discussing, when you do these exercises like we did about thinking about that future, how could it look like and what does it mean for us? A lot of it is about insights and knowledge. It's discovering these things, hearing new perspective, understanding a problem on a new light, etc. But what's really important when you go through this is also to make sure you involve key stakeholders in that process. Because we were saying, as an example, it's very different to give some recommendations out of a foresight work as a report that I put on your desk and then ask you to do something about it, than if you were with us in the last few months a few times and part of these discussions and have awareness about
continuous
what we discussed
process.
And the process.
Okay.
So I think I would say more than ever than the usual the by default is probably that connection is not so easy to have, not just in companies but in many different.
It's very interesting. You talked about the pandemic. So maybe 10 years ago, no one predicted the pandemic. But now, if we put some scenarios 10 years from now, everyone will talk, well, maybe we could have another one. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's enough to be ready for it? To have experienced that pandemic and that situation, do you think that's enough to be ready for another equal situation or even worse?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. What I would say is, off the top of my head, is it's not because you've gone through this that you'll do it right the next time.
Okay.
And I think probably for that example or others, you could probably see that maybe we should be preparing more. I don't know. I'm just saying, it's not having gone through one thing doesn't mean then you're ready for the next time. I think there's some work that needs to happen in between. But nevertheless, there's something interesting, and I was looking for the research. I couldn't find the reference. Going through an event has a huge impact on how you react next time it happens as well. And that's, I think, back in the days, I don't know in which, if it's in the 60s or I'm just throwing out a random number. At some point in the aviation history, you had a drop in human error leading to crash, right? And the explanation was this: they introduced the flight simulator, right?
Okay.
And there's a lot of research about that. And we're saying, you know, this is actually key, because and in business schools, they go through cases, right? Because when you learn by doing and you're putting yourself in that environment,
yes,
next time it happens, you'll have even some connections in your brain that will happen more quickly. So I think yes, it helps, but I think you can just count on this.
Okay.
To make you more prepared. I think there's some work that needs to be done, and I'm not sure it's happening, the example of the pandemic, but others.
Yeah. I've read one of your articles that are available online on World Economic Forum site. So I would like to ask you, in a foresight exercise, is there any room for intuition?
Yes, I think there is.
And it is important, right?
And it is important.
Why is that?
I think I would put intuition in it's the part that is more like the gut feeling, or maybe, you know, you're maybe not backed by facts and data, but it's more how you feel. I think there is, and I think in essence, foresight in many cases is a bit of a mix, because as we said before, you know, you start from trends and data points that are here, that are proven, but then you stretch it into the future, and there's a bit that is a bit of a jump, a creative jump, right? And then you get into waters that are a bit different, where you start be more creative, maybe rely a little bit more on intuition. I think you need a little bit of that when you move further out, because there's no future facts, you know, about 2040. We haven't gone through it, we don't know. But then it needs to be rooted into data. So it's not just blue sky exercise where everyone throw out what they think could happen and then we see what sticks. There's research, but it's a bit of finding the right combination between both. And the time frame you look at is also important. So you could imagine you do foresight on a shorter term. There you'll have maybe less intuition, creativity, and more data-driven. If you do it very far-fetched, right? Some people are doing scenarios for 2,100, right?
Yeah.
Then it will be much more of that intuition, creativity, and openness rather than the data. So I think it also depends on that.
Do you think that intuition is underrated in the business environment? In this exercises to okay, let's foresight the future. Let's see how it goes. Do you think that it's just an intuition? We will not accept this. Let's base ourselves in facts and what we know. So intuition, in your point of view, could be underrated in this scenarios.
I think you said, you know, it could be disregarded, and I think if it's just intuition and there's no data or no facts behind, I think it should be disregarded.
Okay.
Because then it's just, you know, a random exercise. And part of the work is really always to make sure you find the right equilibrium between this future far-fetched, a little bit, you know, maybe the more creative part. But then you always need to come up with evidences that would counteract someone that says this is impossible, right? So if, I don't know what examples we had, maybe earlier today, but you know, we had this idea of, you know, have a conflict, international conflict that could be driven by a malicious individual that you creates a deep fake event, right? And some people would say there's no way this happens. Then what you need to do when you are in that work is to say, okay, look at the things that already happened, and then you start reducing the gap between what's already there and what could happen. And something you do, and there's a quote from someone that escapes my memory now, who says, you know, the future is already here, it's just unevenly distributed. So basically, it's also when you do this work, you try to find these little signals and these little pockets of things that already show you what's going on. And then you try to imagine what happens if this was the norm, right? So it's always about making sure it's connected with reality. It's plausible, but it should be challenging, right? So if it's disconnected from facts and it's just intuition or creative, I think rightly so.
Yeah.
For the purpose of decision making in a company, why would you be taking, you know, anything coming from work like this, right?
That saying, which it is the future, the history repeats itself. It helps you to do some foresight exercises, or not?
That's a very good.
It's a prejudice. It's something that it will not. It doesn't help.
It's a good question, and I, of course, don't have the answer to it. But I think it's interesting to play with that idea. So, as we talked about earlier today, when you develop this future plausible operating context for your company, for instance, these scenarios, try to think about what remains and what changes, right? That's important, because something won't change, something will. So I think if you think about repeating itself, let's think about if it does repeat itself, how does it look like? And then what would change also, because it's not exactly the same context when this happened. So people were talking about Cold War II this morning as one of the scenarios.
It's true.
So it's like, okay, it's repeating itself. So it gives them some clue, and we see some pointers today that, yes, actually something like this could happen. But then it's challenging your thoughts and say, okay, but then it's in a different context. So what would be different there as well? So again, I don't have the answer, but I would play with this to explore, you know, what these things could look like and what it could mean.
So to take a broader perspective, how important is to find the right question?
I think it's important, it's essential, and it's not very easy, right?
Okay. It's the most part, the most difficult part of the of this process, to find the right questions to be answered.
I think it's part of the process to uncover the right questions as well, okay. Right? And it's also one of the outcome of a process like this, is to challenge the questions you have and maybe discover new questions. And that's a big value of a process like this. And I think it's really important because it's almost saying, you know, it's like, why would you run fast if you're not running the right direction? It's a bit of that, right? You need mm-hmm. to be making sure you're looking at things the right way. And then if you're a bit clear on that, you can start going, right? And that's all about the question you
okay.
ask.
Okay.
Because you might have a very good answer to a wrong question, and then
yes, that's
a very relevant question.
Useless. You said it already early in the interview. We talked about the values. I would like to ask you if the values in the future are one of the most difficult topics to make foresights. To understand what values will we have in the future, so we will shape the future to that values, mm-hmm. right?
Yes, what we are saying is very important to also not lose sight of potential shifts in value, right? So if you look at 2040, there's many things that might happen and drive change. And it's not just about regulation, technology, geopolitics, etc. It's also about what will drive us as a society, right? So it's just also to make sure we don't lose sight of this. And I think in a process like this, it's important almost to bring, and I don't have expertise in this, but I think you can bring experts in this who can share a bit more how this works, right? And how okay. this tends to evolve, etc. The point here was to say that value drives a lot of things. And I think you could, if you take the example we discussed this morning of some of the emerging technologies, it also depends on how they intersect with values and what we think is okay, not okay, what we want, what we don't want. Technology, for instance, also influences values. But there was an example of a few years ago when we had this first chat about the Google glasses, right? That was a big thing, and then it flopped.
Yes.
Because it was happening at a moment where we started to kind of distrust a lot of things, and people were not actually ready to, like, why would I ever buy something that films what I see? And yeah. kind of tracks and collect all of this data. And now it's happening again.
Yes.
In a different form, maybe 10 years down the line. And we don't know how this comes up, but it will probably be also defined by this type of things. There's always the regulation, but there's also the value. So it's just to say at the end of the day, we're humans. We make choice. We're driven by needs and by what we think. And that plays out. Difficult to predict again, and difficult to see how this could evolve. And one hint I was giving, it's not always working, but I think it's interesting just to think in those terms. And again, you think 2040, in the case of the exercise we did, you're asking a question of how values could be shifting. Maybe you could look at which is the generation that will be the generation that consumes work, that will be your colleagues, that might be, you know, in politics by then. And maybe this generation is what we call Gen Z, right?
Yeah.
So then try to find out what drives these people. And again, what is different and what is not, because I'm not saying, you know, it will be a whole new. So these type of things, I think, are quite important. And of course, it depends also on the lens of what you're looking at, because that will change from a region to a region.
Mm-hmm.
It changes.
Yes.
There's a lot of different granularity to bring to it. But the message was, don't overlook this, because it's quite important. It's difficult, but you need to start thinking about that, because when you try to figure out those longer-term worlds, you need to take this into account. It will give you some hints that are actually quite important.
Mm-hmm. So sustainability will be, in your opinion, fundamental to define a good management in the future?
There's personal convictions on things, and then you have research, and then you have trends. So I think the trend is that if we take the examples we looked at this morning, as a company, or at least in Europe and many regions, you won't be able to do very well if you disregard these things, right? And I think in Europe, more than everywhere else, there is regulation, and it's a compliance issue, and it's absolutely fundamental, or you're out and maybe can't even operate,
yeah.
right? So that's one thing. And it's the other thing we were talking about today is interesting to explore, And I believe strongly that it's important not just to see this as a compliance issue, but also look at, as a vector of doing things better. And here there's research I was referring to from NYU that analyzed this, did research, and what they see is that this is also becoming, as you said, a bit of the next wave of good management, right? It's good for your employees, it's good for your brand, not in terms of greenwashing, but in terms of how people see you. And it helps you innovate because it helps you ask different questions and look at this as an opportunity for change. And again, to bring this back to the what we said before, I see that something needs to happen. We said before 45% of CEOs believe they should transform if they want to be around in 10 years. I think it's an opportunity to be looking at this as a vector of transformation, right? Mm-hmm. Some people said, 10 years ago it was digital. Maybe now it's this as well. And there will be other technologies as well. But I think it should be there. I think we've seen it's good for business. It's not easy. And it's good for people. Right? Mm-hmm. It's good for us as a society. There's no doubt about this. We have to.
A reference that you said in this section at Enough Club, it's to do any decision for the future that don't involve people and the planet is condemned to disappear.
Yes, I.
And you talked about profit also, of course.
Yes.
It has to be profitable, but if it doesn't concern people and the future of the planet, could be something that is absolutely condemned to disappear, right?
Yeah, I think it's a good thing that, of course, we're talking about corporate environment and people in innovation, so this is driven by market need and also as a way to be good for your profit and for your company. So of course that's the first question, and that's how you get the attention of the leadership in the company. Of course that's the nature of an organization. But what I was saying is that also, everything we see in ESG and triple bottom line, etc., don't forget that because of what we just said before, there's other things that can help you look at things differently, think in other terms, and represent opportunities as well, right? So try to bring in the question of people and planet, of course. There's, as we said, there's part of it that is absolutely essential. It's regulation, and you will have to. But I think go beyond, because we need it, and it's also good business sense to also focus on this in that regard, right?
Okay, we are almost ending this interview, so I would like to ask you if companies from the south of Europe, like Portugal, are more ready to change something for the future or are more resistant. What do you think about it? Do you have any insights about it?
Or? I don't, but what I would say is that you see good examples of companies that are very ready everywhere and others that are not. Also,
okay,
everywhere.
So that's not a cultural aspect, right? It's depending from the companies, right? And the leaderships, of course.
Yeah, I don't think so. No, I don't think so. And something I was talking with a colleague here earlier on, Portugal is a very small market. So you have very quickly, if you start growing, you need to be thinking about how you move out and others, right? So for instance, I think, I don't know if that means future readiness, but at least it means you are not complacent and you need to keep on kind of trying and building and expand. You can't just like do the same thing in the same place and just incrementally grow. You need to make kind of bolder steps. So maybe in that regard, there's some incentives for a company in Portugal to be, when they cross that threshold, to earlier than a company in a large country like in Spain or in France or in Germany, right? The moment you need to go out is much sooner than what you would need in another company, in another country. So maybe that makes you a bit more, innovative. Not innovative, but drives a bit more, I don't know, the pushes you in a way.
Yes. Yeah. It's something that is our, on our DNA, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, thank you, Olivier. Back to a better future. Regresso a futuro mais próspero. Muito obrigado, Olivier Vaufray. Esta foi uma entrevista no âmbito do Enough Club, uma colaboração entre a BTI e a Sociedade de Advogados Vieira de Almeida. Acompanhe estes e outros temas no podcast JE Entrevista e toda a atualidade em jornaleconomico.pt. Até à próxima.